New York's Nash FM 94.7 cares about our community. We're talking about issues that matter to you and your family. This is Nash Matters with Tiffany Marie.
We're back with Dr. James Beck, the Chief Scientific Officer of the Parkinson's Foundation. Now, Dr. Beck, what is the Parkinson's Prevalence Project?
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great question, Tiffany. So, you know, prevalence is just a fancy word for saying how many people have a particular disease. And so we wanted to know that for Parkinson's disease. It's surprising. Parkinson's disease has been identified for over 200 years now. There's a physician in London named James Parkinson who first reported what Parkinson's disease was, and sometime after they named the disease after him. But you know, as I mentioned, in the United States, we hadn't had a good sense of who had Parkinson's disease. Many different disease organizations like my own had a sense for who had PD, but the numbers were wildly varying. The government was reporting low numbers of people with Parkinson's disease, and we knew that that was not the case because of the deep roots we have within the community here in New York and throughout the country. And so we took it upon ourselves to help fund a study to reanalyze, to get a new estimate of who has Parkinson's disease in the United States. And so that's what prevalence is. And a little bit of background is that in 1978 was when the real last major study that the government will often cite for who has Parkinson's disease. And that was a study that took place in a rural part of Mississippi called Copiah County. And they went door to door. It was a very good survey for the time, but they only identified 26 cases of Parkinson's disease. And that number, that study, as good as it was never meant to be extrapolated or utilized to determine how many people in our country, 330 million people strong, racially, ethnically diverse, geographically diverse country, who has Parkinson's disease. And so as a result, we pulled together experts who had deep roots in studying Parkinson's disease and the epidemiology of it and access to different data sets where large number of people were part of a healthcare systems. And so we pulled together this data. And what we found is that in 2010, which was the last time the census was done with the hard numbers of who's in the US, there were about 650,000 people with Parkinson's disease. This was roughly double the number of what had been found using the 1978 study. And remember, 1978, Microsoft was a startup, only 11 people. Times have changed. 40 years since then, our whole definition of what PD has changed. And so, you know, currently we're at 2018. There's about 1 million people with Parkinson's disease, and we anticipate there's gonna be even more by 2030. So it'll be double what there was in 2010. So about 1.4 million people with PD. Parkinson's disease is basically a disease of aging. So age is the biggest risk factor. And so as you have states, communities with a large number of elderly people, you're going to have a large number of individuals with Parkinson's disease. So in New York State alone, there's about 50,000 people with Parkinson's disease who are battling this. And then you think about, it's not just the individual who's dealing with the disease, but their family members, their loved ones, their children. So there's even a larger number of people who are affected by Parkinson's disease. And it really adds urgency to our mission as an organization to go out to the community, go out to members of Congress, to the state legislatures, to really advocate on their behalf to ensure that they have the services they need, but also that there's the funding that's necessary there to do the research and to provide the coverage, as I mentioned, for their care. This study is just the first step. What we really need is a series of numbers, it's called public health data, that we can really more strongly advocate to members of Congress. And the next step is the incidence of Parkinson's disease, which again is a fancy word to say, what's the rate of diagnosis? How many people a year are diagnosed with Parkinson's disease? Yet another unknown. So we're working already with the same group of scientists and epidemiologists to get a better sense of that. And part of understanding the rate of diagnosis is also the mortality. What's the lifespan of someone with Parkinson's disease? Again, we have a good sense of what it is. It varies clearly upon when you're diagnosed. So someone who's 85 clearly is not going to live as long as someone who's diagnosed in their 50s. Just looking at the age thing. But we wanted to get a better sense of what that was. And so that's important. So as we develop new treatments, as we develop new therapies for people with Parkinson's disease, are they able to live longer? So getting these kinds of baseline data. And the implication of it is that all these people with Parkinson's disease, there's a cost to society. Disease has a cost. And We want to be able to recognize what that cost is, economic burden. There's some old data that's available that would suggest that the cost, economic cost of the United States is about $20 billion. And so, you know, with 50,000 people in New York with PD, that's a significant cost to New York State alone. And so what we want to do is be able to recognize that how much money is being spent on Parkinson's disease vis-a-vis the cost, you know, related to the cost, is important to know. And so what we see then is that the federal government, although money's been ticking up for support for Parkinson's disease research, it's not enough. It's only about $180 million. That's 1%, we think, of the total national cost for Parkinson's disease. We could double, triple that cost, and we'd make a huge difference, not only to the efforts that are undertaking for Parkinson's disease, but also to the scientists. One thing to recognize is that treatments don't come out of thin air. They take the dedication of young scientists who were willing to put in their time and efforts, who wake up every day trying to figure out, how do I get a solution to Parkinson's disease? And if we can't give them the support they need to do the research that we so desperately want for the cures, the treatments for Parkinson's disease, then we're going to be really up a creek without a paddle, so to speak. And so, you know, recognizing that there's a human side to this, you know, we're trying to ensure that that funding is there to get to the cures, but also to keep that population of researchers necessary to identify a potential treatment one day for PD.
I'm here with Dr. Beck, the Chief Scientific Officer of the Parkinson's Foundation. Now, as mentioned in the first half, I know there is no one way to diagnose Parkinson's disease. However, there are certain combinations of tests to come to this conclusion. Can you just tell our listeners about that?
Yeah, sure. So, you know, just to clear up some myths about, you know, the diagnostic process, there's no blood test. It's not an infection. People don't get Parkinson's disease from an infection that we know of. And you can't diagnose it by getting a blood test. You can't diagnose it by getting a brain scan. There's no way with which you can go to an MRI or some other fancy machine and say, oh, you have Parkinson's disease, definitively. What it requires is to see a neurologist who's an expert in this. We call them movement disorder neurologists. These are people who are trained in neurology, but also have an extra additional training to focus on movement disorders. That's a broad field, but largely includes Parkinson's disease as a whole. And so these individuals, and we're funding the training of them here in New York City, as elsewhere in the country. We're the largest funder of training for neurologists to become movement disorder fellows there is. And so, you know, getting that expert care is important. And so when you go to a neurologist and they begin to ask whether you have, you know, trying to determine whether you have Parkinson's disease, they're going to send someone through a battery of tests. And they're simple tests. They're something you do in the office. And it involves a lot of maybe tapping of fingers, you know, moving your hands back and forth, you know, clapping them on the lap. And the idea here is to activate movements, which, if you do them repetitively, begin to slow down in a person with Parkinson's disease. So a person with Parkinson's disease can do all these movements, but if they try to sit there and tap their fingers repeatedly very fast, you and I, Tiffany, could do that without a problem. But someone with PD, they would slowly have a hard time doing it. Or instead of having big space between their fingers as they do this tapping, that it comes down to just barely little space at all. And you can see from these physical observational tests that someone has Parkinson's disease. That's where we are. We're hopeful to identify ways that we can have what are called biomarkers to confirm a diagnosis or understand where the disease is going. And that's another question. When we talk about where the disease is going to go, it's called the prognostic outcome. You know, what's the future hold for me? Unfortunately, we don't have very much information. We have averages on what people have experienced. But as we mentioned in the first half, that Parkinson's disease is a very individualistic disease. No two people seem to have the same trajectory. And being able to narrow the scope of that can be really important. Some people have a genetic cause to their Parkinson's disease, and that's something we're beginning to do on a large scale, just beginning to roll it out, hopefully by next year, to offer genetic testing with counseling. It's very important to have this counseling with the genetic testing to identify who has Parkinson's disease with a genetic component. And some people who have different genetic forms of PD, their PD, we know, are just beginning to learn, progresses at different rates. And so having a sense of what people have or don't have for their Parkinson's disease can be really important. It can be really empowering for individuals to know more about their disease. And so that's one of the things we work so hard with at the foundation, is providing educational materials, which can be found on our website. We have webinars, which we have every other month, about topics in Parkinson's disease. People can listen on a telephone or via computer if they have that available, and you know, really understand more about their Parkinson's disease. We did a study recently asking people about their Parkinson's disease and how they were dealing with it. And we found that people who knew about our organization, knew about the Parkinson's Foundation, they had better outcomes. People were living better lives. People who don't have the information they need to take care of themselves, they don't have the outcomes. They're having trouble with their disease. And so we believe that if people can join us, if we can join them on their journey in dealing with Parkinson's disease, we can provide that information that's so important. Because someone who's educated about their disease, they can do so much more. I mean, what it comes down to, Tiffany, is that if you have a disease, whether it's Parkinson's disease or diabetes or Alzheimer's, you don't live at the doctor's office. You go maybe an hour every 6 months, and then the rest of the time, you're dealing with your disease yourself. And so that's why we feel it's so important to empower and to educate our community to know what Parkinson's disease is, and so they can better advocate for themselves when they go see the doctor, so they can take care of themselves as necessary.
I want to give that website one more time. It's www.parkinson.org. You mentioned that there is no cure as of now.
Correct.
For the Parkinson's disease. How does the treatment help?
Right. So treatments right now are varied, and they all are really geared to help primarily with the motor symptoms. There's some other symptoms that we talked about, these non-motor symptoms that therapies are beginning to come online for. Pharmaceutical companies are beginning to develop these therapies, recognizing there's a depth to Parkinson's disease. But for the motor symptoms, by and large, there are therapies which adequately, certainly very effectively initially, but you know, Parkinson's disease is a progressive disease. It gets worse over time. And the medications, they do their job still, but your disease is progressing underneath still. And so they appear to work less well because the symptoms get worse. And so you can only control the symptoms a certain way. And so the medications we have right now control the symptoms of Parkinson's disease. Someone who's newly diagnosed, those medications work great. You would not be able to tell someone has PD from someone who doesn't because the medications work so great. As the PD progresses over time, you know, 5 or 6 years of stage, they start to have problems. The medications have what are called side effects. Not surprising, many medications do. And those side effects are really in large part due to the progression of the disease. The mainstay medication is a drug called levodopa carbidopa, or Sinemet, it's the trade name. And it has really good effect for people with motor symptoms right out of the gate. But one of the side effects of this medication is what's called dyskinesia. And dyskinesia is a word to describe kind of a movement, kind of a, or people kind of seem to be restless and they're moving their arms around or maybe their legs around. They have a hard time sitting still, it looks like, from an outside viewpoint. And that's a side effect of the medication. If people didn't take their levodopa, they wouldn't be able to move. So you need to take the medication to be able to move, to be able to do what you need to do, to have that quality of life. And so the side effect, it's because there's changes in the brain. Parkinson's disease progresses, and so the medications are going to act a little differently as your brain changes, as the disease progresses. And so there are other medications, other therapies, which can help control some of these side effects. And as the disease progresses, there can be other complications as well, which is why it's really important to see the kind of specialist that's required. There's other people who can help too. Physical therapy. Exercise is probably one of the best things a person with Parkinson's can do to help themselves. It's not a cure for PD, but it will really help all aspects of their lives. It's a rising tide, as they say, that lifts all boats. So being physically fit, eating well, those are things that can just help anyone, right? But especially if you're dealing with a chronic disease like Parkinson's disease. And so these are kind of some of the steps. So seeing a physical therapist who knows about Parkinson's disease. If you're having trouble swallowing or with speech, seeing a speech language pathologist to be able to help rectify and develop some therapies for that. So there's many aspects of Parkinson's disease that can be addressed and to help people. And I'll say, if I may, one of the things that many people with PD deal with is depression. It seems to be part of the disease itself. It's devastating to get the diagnosis, for certain, but that doesn't seem to be the cause for PD. About 30% of the people with depression and PD, they get the depression diagnosis before their PD diagnosis. So it happens to be the brain changes that are going on there. And so there are medications, there are treatments available, so people don't have to be alone with this. It's a disease that often can inhibit movement and can be a very lonely disease, and need to recognize that there's therapies available, that there's treatments available. They don't have to necessarily be that way. And there's community support. And people who are really adrift, we have a helpline that's available. They can call in and speak to one of our my colleagues who are specialists at this, and can provide some information that can help them, guide them to the right doctor that they need. That number's 1-800-4-PD-INFO. There's a number to go along with that, and I'll leave that to you, Tiffany, to read that off. But it's something that, you know, I think is available to us in addition to a website, because not everyone has access to a computer, right? And so having that broad array is why we feel as an organization it's inherent to our community to be able to help them.
Living with Parkinson's can be hard for the individual, a loved one, or even a caretaker. Please visit www.parkinson.org, or you can call their helpline 1-800-473-4636. I want to thank you so much, Dr. Beck, for coming in and letting our listeners know exactly what the Parkinson's Foundation is.
Thank you very much. I appreciate the opportunity.
That was Dr. James Beck, the Chief Scientific Officer of the Parkinson's Foundation. This has been Nash Matters with Tiffany Marie on Nash FM 94.7.
If you'd like your organization or charity featured on Nash Matters, contact us through our website at nashfm947.com. And thank you for listening to Nash Matters on New York's Nash FM 94.7.